This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Hey, I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the St. Jude kids. St. Jude's doing incredible work fighting childhood cancer. And because of donations like the ones that you give, families never receive a bill ever from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, food, none of that. Help St. Jude stop childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope. Get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. It's going to look great on you. So join all the doctors, researchers, and me in this fight. All right, text the word Bobby. It's only 6 numbers to 785-833. Again, text the word Bobby to just these 6 numbers, 785-833. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. You know, before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the rise of outlaw country music and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision in her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest. If you listen to this podcast, you know some of my favorite artists, songwriters, music people, they love sports like I do. And a lot of times, that's how we bond during the Bobbycast, is that we'll find something sports related, and it kind of allows us to get to other places. I mean, heck, it's how I bond with my father-in-law a lot. Like, it's like, oh, let's talk football. And the next thing you know, we're crying on each other's shoulder. Well, that part's not true. But I did want to play some of the best, most fun sports interviews from 25 Whistles here. Now, because it's not just sports talk. This is life, career. These are legends. It's the same way that I interview people on any podcast or show that I do. It's much more of their journey to get places and very little, all right, we're going to go 32 minus 3. We're going to go hood. So that's what this is. And I'm super excited to be able to put this together because this to me was some of the most fun that I've ever had interviewing people. Now, first up is Colin Cowherd. He works at Fox Sports now, and Colin Cowherd, I guess I knew him first from ESPN. He went to Fox Sports. He's one of those rare people that have been able to be super, super successful, even when he made a transition from network to network. And as someone who works in morning radio, I did want to know what Colin's day looked like. He's got a massive show. We talked about going from a small town in Washington. Now he's one of the biggest faces and voices on sports television, radio, podcast. You know, what motivated him growing up? And thanks to Colin for being so open to talk about his life, his career journey. Here he is, Colin Cowherd. Hey, Colin, first off, just been a massive fan for, I'm just going to start with this and we'll move to the real stuff, but for like 15 years, like diehard, massive fans.
Oh, geez.
So to be able to sit and talk with you for just a few minutes, like it's a real thrill for me, so thank you.
Oh, of course. Yeah, your career's exploded. It's just amazing. They're really behind you at the company. I think it's great.
So what? I'm curious at how other people do their creative endeavors. And before, because I do want to go back to when you were a kid, but I want to know what your day is like, meaning I watch a show and I DVR it. So I do get to watch or I'll hit the podcast. And so I see and I hear, but people don't see the behind the scenes stuff. What time do you get in the daytime and how many people do you sit with before a show and go over ideas or segments?
Get up at about 5:40, leave my house at about 6, there at 6:15, put the contacts in, walk upstairs. And it's about an hour and a half process. Used to be about 2 hours, but we've got a really good crew. I would say there are 9 people in the room. They've got about 10 stories laid out for me. I pick probably 4. And then they just keep throwing ideas at me. I usually come in with something to say on 1 or 2. I have kind of a worldview on how I view each story. And then I just like them to pitch ideas and funny lines and argue and any way we can sandpaper it to get the most interesting take. You know, I tell young broadcasters all the time, don't be consumed with being right. It'd be great to be right, but be interesting. Find the most interesting angle on something. And That's what we really strive for. Just, and I've done it long enough, Bobby, where I can kind of sense like, oh yeah, I haven't heard anybody say that on that story. And I, by the way, I'm always hoping to be right. But what I think is, you're probably curious. I think I'm curious. I'm looking for angles on stuff. And I like the why better than the what. Like, why is this happening? I can see what is happening. I think 99% of sports talk show hosts tell me what I see. I like to be the 1% that says, this is why you're seeing it. And, you know, a lot of times I'm wrong. My theory is wrong. But I think a lot of the times that's what we're always seeking, kind of the why something is happening.
You know, it sounds to me when you describe what you do, there's still a passion in your voice about what you do. And to be doing it at such a high level for so long, to still have that passion. Like, what is it? What happened in your childhood with me? It was just growing up a food stamp kid and a welfare kid. But what is it for you that keeps you just driven toward this success, really, that no one else has had like you've had it?
Well, you know, I had all the things necessary, probably. Childhood divorce, high school acne, girls not dating me. the divorce left me very poor. Always felt loved, but kind of a reluctant. My mom was sort of British, doting, kind of protective. You know, dad was a really decent guy, small town doctor, but very career driven. Maybe I felt ignored and wanted people to pay attention to me. I knew what I wanted to do at a very early age. But I also felt, and it's not sad, but I felt I was kind of on my own. Like, it's not that my parents weren't there for me. I mean, you know, I never felt, never verbal abuse, or I wasn't loved, none of that stuff. But I always kind of felt, my dad was a workaholic. My mom was British, wasn't going to help me a lot in my career. And so I always felt sort of the word escapes me. I would say if I needed to be self-reliant, and if I didn't succeed, then I wouldn't succeed if I didn't make my own path. And I, you know, I tell my kids this all the time, is that I want to raise you so at 20 years old, you don't need me anymore. Like, that's kind of how I was raised. And I think that kind of fight and that survival mechanism has been really powerful for me. So, you know, I definitely child of divorce, a sister that was 5.5, 6 years older. So by the time I was in high school, she was out. You know, we weren't close. No 18-year-old girl wants to hang around a 12.5-year-old boy, right? And so it was rural. So I didn't have this wide social net of friends. I mean, every house was, you know, a ways away. So you kind of had to make up your own fun. And I would make up batting lineups on a piece of paper and do the play-by-play and play wiffle ball by myself and play basketball sometimes by myself and shoot baskets. And, you know, I was a Laker. It's Jabbar over to this player, over to that player, 18-footer good. Talk to myself, still do a lot. So that independence, self-reliance still kind of, you know, it thrives in me today.
You know, rural, that's how I describe where I'm from too. I'm from a small town in Arkansas, like 700 people. And there was nobody to tell me that I couldn't do anything, but nobody actually knew you right. Could outside of where you lived. There was a mill, it's a sawmill town. And so they weren't saying you can't go and do a TV show or a big radio show, but they definitely weren't saying I could. And the same thing about you, like who put it in you, who instilled in you that there were these dreams that no one around you had actually reached out and touched, but that you could do it?
That's a good question. I think that is a good question. Who instilled these dreams? I think I always felt like an underdog. Like when I went to college, I always had that chip on my shoulder. Nobody thought I could do it. You know, I didn't have a lot of money. I had to work while I went to school. And I think there's a survival thing. I don't know if anybody told me I could or couldn't do it. I just remember my mom, when I was about 13 years old, 12 or 13 years old, telling me one day I was reading the paper. She goes, you know, you just can't read the sports section. that just can't be it. And I said, yeah, it can. I am going to work in sports. I am going to work in sports, and I know it. And I just at a very early age, you know, I quarterbacked my high school team. I was a little taller than some guys, a little more athletic. I always had, you know, I dated like a cheerleader. I always had kind of, even though I was kind of goofy, I kind of had this confidence about me. And I can remember when I was, you know, 17 to 27, you know, and I was in Vegas. I remember, you know, I would date women or go on dates and they'd be like, man, you are driven. Like they're like, you know, you'd be impossible to marry. Like, you're married to your career. And I would be like, yeah, it's great. It's a great career. It's a great life, you know? And then all of a sudden you have kids. I get married. It's 30s. But I think, Bobby, I just think I was so driven, and that comes from loneliness and, you know, just sort of this small town underdog mentality. And I think it's just always been in me. I don't know if it was engineered by anybody. If it was, I don't remember it. But I always knew. I can remember when I was young, just thinking, I had no doubt in my mind I was going to be like a network sportscaster. And when I went to college and people didn't care as much as I did, I remember thinking, this is my competition. And then I went to Vegas and got a job, and the people I worked with didn't care as much as I did. So every step of the way, I was like, man, I am really into this. And other people think it's just the job. And so every market I went to, it was like, man, they just don't love it like I do. They don't think about it. They don't dream about it. They don't plan for it. They don't construct their day around it. So I kept being reminded how much I loved it. And if I worked hard, how I could get there. And it was just step after step after step after step. And that passion, that confidence just grew as I'd join clubs or stations or radio stations or TV stations. And I could just tell it was a job for people, and it was more of a mission for me.
I talked to my therapist a lot about balance, because I, like you, have just been consumed with me having this humongous chip, probably much bigger than I should have, but in trying to prove people wrong, and now try to prove people right. Like, I'm at the point in my career where I go, okay, I'm going to prove these folks right who have invested in me. And I've done pretty good sitting on the old therapist couch, but I'm married now for the first time. I didn't get married until I was 40 years old. And balance is a struggle, because I have been so consumed with what I do, which was my job. How in the world do you reach the level that you've reached and still achieve any sort of balance?
Well, I've had some balance, Bobby. What I really try to do, and it's not always easy, is live very much in the moment. Is that when I'm around my wife or my kids, I really live in the moment. This is going to be what I do. I went to Rome with my wife. I went to Italy for a week and just put the phone down. Or I go to Turks and Caicos, take pictures, put the phone down. So try to live in the moment when I have these opportunities. But I think it's a struggle. You know, I said this once to a therapist. I think I wrote about this once in my first book. I said, you know, there's a lot of things that make people happy. If you Googled what makes people happy, they would say animals, giving, good friends. You know what they never say? Balance. Peyton Manning wasn't balanced. I mean, was Michael Jordan balanced? I think it's a little overrated. You know what I'd rather be? Wildly passionate about my wife, about my job, about my the volume. I think I'm really passionate. And as I've gotten older, I've pruned my tree. Like, that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. But I don't think balance has ever made me happy. I mean, you tell me, are you I'm happy today. Are you happy?
Yeah, I'm happy because I'm at the place now where, like, all that I've been working for forever is finally coming to fruition, right? Like, I've really just in the TV world and the radio world and it's like I'm finally getting the opportunity to pick what I want to do instead of, I get to say no to things. Like, how cool is that? I've never got to say no to things before, like real things. And I get to say no, and it's a weird thing but that to me, I told my wife, because she has a great family. And to her, family has always been a bit, but I didn't have a dad, I didn't have a mom. So I've just had my career. And so now I'm trying to figure out, like, how in the world do I
And balance doesn't mean 50-50, but how in the world do I balance this at all? And I look at someone like you who's able to crush it professionally, and I hear you talk about your wife and even your kids, and it's like, dang, how does he do that? So I guess, if anything, I'll send you a bill for this therapy session when this is over.
But you know who never seems happy to me? Ski bum, poet, web designer, part-time artist. A million things, they're not a mile deep on any of them. If you're totally invested in your wife and totally invested in your career, and then you have a really great charity, and then you have a couple of kids, what a life. When you're into those, I mean, balance is one of those sort of like ethereal, sort of nebulous things. It's like, I live a balanced life. No, I sleep for 7. I work for 6. I nap and listen to music for 1. I work out for 1. I eat for 2. I'm into all of those things when I'm doing them. I don't sit around worrying about balance. What I worry about is enjoying the time I have in the moment doing what I'm doing. And if it comes out as balance, but there are some days I don't do much work. Once the football season ends, I get 3-day weekends. I don't even think about work. So, and then there are other times during the football season, my Sundays are a work day. So I think sometimes people, it's like FOMO, fear of missing out. There's this fear of lacking balance. We'll create a new FOLB, fear of lacking balance. I don't think that many people have balance. And I don't think perfect balance makes anybody happy.
Let's go back to a job that you had early on that at the time seemed tough, but you look back and you're like, dang, I actually learned a lot there. You know, I did play-by-play. The home games, I did play-by-play for Division II Henderson State University. And then on the road, I had to do play-by-play in color because we couldn't afford to send 2 people out in the crew. And it was really hard. But I look back and I'm like, man, I really learned a whole lot there. In Hot Springs, Arkansas, doing a radio show, I learned a whole lot because I had to do everything. When you look back at your career, what was that job or a couple jobs for you where really difficult, but you're still thankful you had them because of everything that you developed?
Well, my first job out of college was really doing an inning of play-by-play for Las Vegas.
You say an inning?
I did it. Just an inning. I had to sell, and they would give me 1 inning of play-by-play. I was like 22. So the guys around me were like 38, 40. They were been doing it for years. They probably resented me. And it was hard because I wanted to be on the air more. So I had to do sales all day, and then I would do prep, and then I would do an inning and save my tapes. And I mean, I spent like 7-8 years in Vegas, a couple in sales, a couple doing an inning, then a TV station hired me. Vegas was a grind. It took years off my life. It was really, really hard. I didn't have a lot of money for probably the first 5-6 years. Child of divorce. So I went into the city broke. I was broke for about 5-6 years. I mean, had no money. And was working nonstop, inning a play-by-play, doing sales. Then a local TV station hired me. I did an internship, turned into a weekend sports job. But I will tell you this. I needed other people. And there were a lot of beer and chicken wing nights with TV people and radio people. And as you and I get more successful, I think we'll just sort of naturally have fortresses around us, right? You have the agent, you have the bosses, and you don't deal with the day-to-day because you're making so much money for the company now, and hopefully I am, that, you know, we are 2 of the people at the company that are, you know, businesses thriving. And so this is where I wanted to be. But those journey years for me, I have such good memories. All the mistakes, all the dollar chicken wings. I was a more social animal then. I'm probably less social now because it's more about family and business. So those years I have very 6-7 years, very fond Vegas memories. The mob was still in Vegas then. It was a different town than it's very corporate now. I feel like I got to see the old, it was transitioning old Vegas, like the movie Casino, you know, that was just ending. And then I went to Vegas and it was starting with instead of like a guy owning a casino, it was the Hilton. It was the MGM. It was, you know, so I felt like I was in a transition stage in Vegas, and I feel so lucky that I lived through that.
I got on a Southwest flight once, and Barry Switzer was on the flight. And I was like, dang, this is crazy. Barry Switzer, who's from Arkansas, near where I'm from.
Yeah.
Obviously, he coached Oklahoma with Cowboys, but he's an Arkansas guy like me. And I flipped out. And I think we're both probably pretty jaded now when it comes to celebrities, yeah, because we know they just happen to have a skill that culturally we deem a little cooler than the rest. It just so happens right. Their skill is deemed cooler. And so at this point, I don't get starstruck by many folks, and I would assume it's the same for you, but who have you met in the last few years where you're just like, this is so freaking cool, I get to meet and talk with you?
Well, I'm always amazed. A lot of people watch sports shows or see my clips. And I think the funniest story was, Keith Olbermann had a show on ESPN years ago, and he took a couple days off. And so they called me and said, would you do Keith's show? It was a TV show in a New York setting. So I drove to New York, stayed the night, and I did the show for a couple days. And he doesn't like college football much. So they said, hey, we want to put some college football on the show. Condoleezza Rice is a big fan of college football. I was like, oh, awesome. And so I pre-taped the interview with Condoleezza Rice, right, that you put into the show and it looks live. And you tape it for 12, 15 minutes. You use 11 of it or 10 of it. And so, like here, we can see each other on a screen. And I'm like, 3-2-1, 3-2-1. And all of a sudden I hear this, the Herd. And I'm like, she goes, oh, I listen to you every morning on the treadmill. And I'm like, you're running the country. Stop that.
Stop that
right now. Don't do that. And we sat and talked about things for about 10 minutes. And that was like one of those, this is really, really cool. That's one that really jumps out to me, that I've had these conversations with Jimmy Johnson off the air in the green room when I used to do the Sunday show for Fox. And I would just pepper him with questions. And Bobby would tell me the hurricane days and the Dan Marino stories and the Dallas stuff that you can't say on the air. That to me is when I'm just jaw dropping in awe of what I do for a living. I'm like, this is the coolest thing in the world right now, talking to Jimmy Johnson about the Miami hurricane days. And I can't tell any of these stories on the air.
Those are the best stories. I get those a lot too, where I'm like, one day I'll be able to share this. And because, you know, in this industry here, there's a lot of shady stuff that goes down that's very interesting and very entertaining. But it's also the shady stuff that you can't share. And so
I know. Well, you know, Bobby, when I started in this business, I tell people this. In my 20s and early 30s, if I had information, I wanted to make sure everybody knew I had information. Now I'm in my 50s. I have to bury information because I've built up all these sources through the years and they tell me stuff and I can't let it out. And so I'll never write a book on it. I'm not going to do a Geraldo and write a book, you know, at the end of my career. So I find that early in my career, I was like, hey, I got information I want to tell you. Now, like you have sourcing, you want to be close to people, you want to be trusted. And I don't say stuff. I got a lot of information that I can kind of use on the air as a direction or starting point on a story. But I'm so glad there are people out there that trust me, like GMs, you know, players, and they know I'm not going to burn them. But that's the part of my job. Like you and I will have this closet, this little black book of stories that'll never get out. But that is one of the great things about our job, that information and that proximity to people that they trust us. And I really appreciate that.
Who was the first person that actually expressed to you, and you believe them, that you could be great?
So I had worked in Vegas for 7 years, and then I got a job in Tampa doing weekends. And to supplement my income, a local Rob Weingartner, I think is his name. Rob Weingarten. He was a program director at a sports talk radio station in Tampa. And he had seen me on TV and he said, I got this old guy, Hubert Mizell. He was a sports writer, the late Hubert Mizell, a good friend. He goes, I want to couple you with him in the mornings. I said, that'd be awesome. So we did it. And I had been doing it for about 6 months. And one day Rob came in. And Rob said, hey, you got a phone call. I want you to call this guy back after the show. He's a sports talk radio consultant. His name is Rick Scott, Seattle based. So I did the show with Hubert. Hubert was very funny. We got along great. And the show was over and I called this guy back. And Rick Scott was in town. I think he was you know, at that time, Bobby, and still is, there was like two or three sports radio stations in town. And he had seen me the night before on TV. And he said, you don't know who I am. He says, quit television. You are going to be the Rush Limbaugh of sports talk radio host. And I went, what do you mean? And he said, I've heard everybody in the country. He goes, quit television. He goes, I'm going to call you in about 3 months, 4 months, keep working at it. And blah, 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 blah. A while later, a few months later. So that was the first person that ever said anything. And I was just like, you know, because I didn't listen to everybody else. I didn't know what everybody else sounded like, except the people in Tampa. They were fine. And then a few months later, I was sending out TV tapes. And another guy called me, Bruce Arena, ran a station in Portland. And he said, I got a call from Rick Scott, and I was told, hire you. He goes, I've never heard of you, and I've never heard your tape, but I trust Rick. So you want to be my sports afternoon host. So that was my big break. But that was the first time. I thought, like you, Bobby, I thought I was a hard worker, and I was talented, and I cared about it, and I was invested in it. But nobody had ever said, hey, you could do this. And it really inspired me. It was really inspiring to me. It was just like, wow. I almost felt like, okay, this guy knows this industry way better than I do. I don't want to disappoint him. So it made me work harder. You know, before sports talk radio, when I first started, I was a TV guy, and I just liked talking. And Hubert Mizell was very funny, and he had this sort of Southern charm, and I just liked him. We liked the same stuff. We laughed a lot. But it didn't pay at all back then. And it just wasn't as formidable, like with iHeart, as it is now. It just wasn't. I think Jim Rome was just starting, and it wasn't the industry that it is now. So that was it. That was the first time somebody said, you could potentially be something pretty cool.
Well, this is one of those moments for me that I mentioned earlier where it's just freaking cool to be able to hang out. So thanks for being so generous with your time. Been a massive fan forever, and I'll just continue to be a massive fan. And that's it. So thanks, Colin, and hopefully one day I'll see you in real life.
Bobby, you are beloved at the company. Your career is on fire for a reason. Musically gifted, verbally gifted. You have earned all of it. And you're one of the easiest guys in our business to root for. So I'm really happy for you.
Thanks, Colin. Hope you have a great day. Thanks for the time, buddy.
Hang tight. The BobbyCast will be right back.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct-to-consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit Tecovas.com.
Tecovas.com. Tecovas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, to take care of others.
You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in Hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight, and just text the word Bobby to 785-833. It's only six numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833.
And we're back on the Bobbycast.
Thanks again to Colin for being so open and great when he came on. Now let's go to Dan Patrick. This one was crazy to do. Dan worked as a radio and TV sports anchor host for years with ESPN, like he was SportsCenter. Dan Patrick's one of the coolest people that I had never met, now that I had spent some time with him, at least on an interview. Like, I'm even happier that I adored what he did. Like, he was one of those guys that really got SportsCenter and ESPN and kicked it off to being a major pop culture phenomenon. Now you can listen to Dan on Peacock, on Premier Radio Networks. Dan and I talked about his years of interviews, how he can still get motivated to do them many years later, even after being so jaded and knowing that, you know, how trivial is this whole thing anyway? Dan also told me about being in the right place at the right time and how being overly prepared for the moment led to him and his career to where it is today. Here he is, Dan Patrick.
Whoa,
Dan! Good to talk to you.
Good,
massive fan. Just a massive, massive fan. So, you know, when they said you would actually spend a few minutes with me, I was shocked, first of all, and elated. So, just a humble thank you before we start.
Great. Glad to help.
You know, whenever I'm doing an interview, and I, in one capacity or the other, I do them all the day, all the time, either on the radio show or on a TV show. But I it starts to just be a wheel, and you're just doing them as they come, and you rarely get excited. Sometimes you're a little more up for one because you know the value of it. But at this point in your career, do you still get pumped about interviews, and with who especially?
I think if you have somebody who's going to be honest with you, because you want to make sure you're not wasting the time of your audience. And I always want to make sure if I have somebody on, maybe you don't know who they are, but I'm going to bring out something in them that you would be interested in. I like the challenge of doing that, but it's the person who's going to be honest or most honest that I find interesting. It's the person who tries to dodge what you're asking, doesn't give you much, wants to be very vanilla, then that's where it gets really tedious.
Give me an example of somebody who's great that you know. All right, we're going to do it, and they're going to be awesome.
Charles Barkley is always great. Reggie Miller is always great. I find that if, you know, my guests know if they come on the show that this is what we're asking them to do. Don't come on the show unless you're ready to really give something, reveal something. But it's up to me sometimes to kind of extract that from these guys. They get interviewed more than anybody. When you think about it, athletes are interviewed more than anybody. You know where they are, you know, every day at practice, you know, before a game, after a game with the NBA. You have to have an approach that is refreshing to them and their competitors. And I find I got to compete with you to get an answer out of you. John McEnroe said, you got to work harder to get a better answer out of me. And he was right. This was early in my career. And I never forgot that. Sometimes you got to work harder to get a better answer out of somebody.
Do you feel like you're a better interviewee because you interview so many people?
No. Because you know what I'll do is I'll critique your questions while you're asking them. And it's not fair to you, but I've given so much thought to interviewing. When I was at ESPN, I did a seminar that was 5 days, 8 hours each day on interviewing. It was the best thing that ever happened to me in my career. But it's the worst thing when you start to listen to radio or you listen to somebody on TV doing interviews because you're listening for the things that they're not doing what you were told to do to bring out a good interview. Open-ended questions, short question. You know, that first question, what are you setting up for the next question for your last question? What are you trying to get at? Like, there's a strategy to it. And I wouldn't have known this until I took this class. It was a guy named John Sawatsky out of Canada. He was the master of the interview, and I was fascinated by it. I don't know who else, if anybody else was at ESPN, they were mad at me because I wanted to bring this guy in to teach us how to interview, because I saw an article, and people were like kicking and screaming, going to this seminar, And they didn't realize that I'm the reason why they were going there, because I wanted this guy to come in and help us.
You know, when you talk about the ESPN stuff, I didn't have a lot of questions about that, and I still don't, but it makes me think about, you know, my whole lifetime of watching you on ESPN and even Rock and Roll Jeopardy, which I was a big Jeopardy guy and a music guy, obviously. And then, you know, watching on Sunday nights, and I would come home from the radio show and watch your radio show, you and all the Danettes, like just a massive fan. But, you know, I've started to realize that I, as a public figure, people think they know me at times more than they actually do, and they'll come up. And so, you know, one of the things that I'm most curious about is, like, if you go to your house, and I feel like I know you, but I obviously don't on a personal level, like, in your house, like, what is your favorite picture in your house? Which, if I just ask that question, what is it? Who's in it?
I'm a big fan of the artist Wolf Kahn. He passed away. I think he was just over the age of 90. And you can't be in a bad mood when you look at a painting of Wolf Kahn. Now, pictures, there's a picture of my daughter in the library where she's in Galway, and she's in a mud puddle, and she's probably 11 years of age, and she's got mud all over her. She's throwing mud in the air. She got the biggest smile. And it's one of those moments that you just go, that person is having a great day. So I tend to gravitate towards, you feel better after you see that picture and you see a painting from Wolf Kahn.
What about if I ask about sports? What personal sports picture do you have? Either you're somewhere or with someone that you look at and it's not, it doesn't mean as much because obviously that's your daughter, but it's like, man, that was a great moment either in sports life or my life.
I was in a boxing ring. It was a fight night in Arizona, and I was the host, and we were honoring Muhammad Ali, and we were going to give him this ring. And Muhammad Ali is standing next to me waiting for me to give him this ring. And I'm describing to the audience what this ring signifies, and I'm going to hand this to Muhammad Ali. And, you know, that this was probably 20 years ago, but, you know, Parkinson's, the onset of Parkinson had started there. And I just remember in the moment, I'm thinking, I'm going to give a ring to Muhammad Ali. And I sort of fanboyed that. I was like, I got to get this out of my head. Because sometimes that's the problem. I have too many things I'm thinking of when I'm doing something that I shouldn't be thinking about. But that moment where I look and I go, who would have thought that a kid came from a small town in Ohio is there with Muhammad Ali, honoring Muhammad Ali. And it's never lost on me where I came from. And growing up in a big family, that I came a long way, but that you can come from a small town where you never would have thought you've gotten there. So it brings out a lot of different thoughts, memories there of, you're still this kid who's from Mason, Ohio, but you got here. Don't forget where you came from.
Yeah, I'm from Mountain Pine, Arkansas, population 700. So similar instances, you know, growing up, and there wasn't a lot of resource where I came from. So what showed you, and who showed you, that there was actually a path to greater, even though you couldn't quite define greater?
I think I was too naive or stupid to let reality sink in that you can't do this. I didn't have a plan B. So when people said, oh, if you weren't going to be a sportscaster, what would you be? And I'd be like, I don't know. I'm guessing bartender, but I didn't know. And I had been rejected in quite a few places. I lost a job, a local job in Dayton, Ohio, and I was distraught. So I'm 26, 27. I don't have a full-time job in sports, and that's old in this business to get started. And I thought, I'm never going to get in. I was doing morning drive radio, rock and roll station. And I thought, this is what I'm going to be doing. And an ex-girlfriend said, just come down to Atlanta. I said, I don't want to go to Atlanta. She goes, no, just come down here. CNN's hiring. I go, I lost out on a job in Dayton, Ohio. I'm not going to get a job at CNN. So I go down there. Lo and behold, I go in there. Last day I'm in Atlanta. Give them my resume tape. Guy says, when can you start? So if I don't go to Atlanta, I'm not here. I mean, I'm somewhere, but I'm not here. Because CNN, I was there for 5 years. And after that, I went to ESPN for 18. So I always tell people, right place, right time, but you better be right about what you have to know. Like, you have to know it if you get that opportunity. And I'm sure that at some point, somebody wanted to see if you knew exactly what you needed to know. And you did, or you wouldn't be seated there. Like, we get those moments, but be ready for the moment. And that was something that stayed with me, stays with me. I tell that to my kids all the time. Be prepared. Be over-prepared. Even if you don't get it, you'll still show that that person, you show them respect by being prepared.
You mentioned 18 years at ESPN, and I worked on American Idol for 4 seasons, and I would talk to some of the old contestants from back when Idol was so big, but they said they didn't know it. They couldn't feel it because they were in it. Now, ESPN was a culture, especially for me. Was that situation similar because you guys were changing culture? Did you know it, and could you feel it then, or was it its own bubble?
We were cordoned off, absolutely, and I think that's by design, by management. They didn't want us to be bigger than those four letters. Not that we could be, but they didn't want us coloring outside the lines. Management even told me on one occasion, we don't want another Chris Berman, because Berman is the most important person in the history of ESPN, but he was sort of, you know, a hot air balloon that was higher than everybody else, but still tethered. And they didn't want that. They didn't want that to happen to me or Keith Olbermann or Stuart Scott or whoever you want to throw in there. So they didn't want you to be a personality. So I think that was kind of eye-opening, that we were getting honored, mentioned. People came up to us when we saw them when we were out at events, but we weren't in New York or LA. We were in Bristol, Connecticut. We didn't run into anybody. But when we did, then you heard the impact that we were having. And you kind of juxtapose that to management. We never knew our ratings. They never told us. They didn't want to empower you and say, you guys are really kicking ass here. It was like, yeah, you guys are solid and improving, you know, kind of doing a good job there. And you're like, damn, I thought we were good. But that was eye-opening there, that management wanted to kind of keep us under their thumb.
Final question about the ESPN days. And as far as would you say is your BFF now from those days, if you had to pick one?
Oh, I would say that I correspond with Rich Eisen more than anybody else. The people I really enjoyed were producers, associate producers, the makeup people, camera people. Those are the people I always enjoyed being around. Nobody wants to be around talent because all we do is talk about ourselves. I wanted to be around the people who were just normal or as normal as possible in our business. And those are the people I'm still in touch with, more the producers than the talent there. But probably Rich Eisen.
How hard is it to have a source that's telling you something, but you can't say it, and you almost have to act like you don't know it?
For the most part, I don't want to know if I can't use it. I say that to, and I'm fortunate, having been in this business for almost 40 years, you meet people that you trust because you can go back to them, or they'll let you know if you're right or wrong on something. But I don't want to know something that I can't even hint at. Because then I'm not being, then it's gossipy. And I don't want to do that. But it is a tough situation to be in sometimes if somebody goes, hey, you can't use it. And I'll go, then don't tell me. Because I don't want to know. But when they're like, you didn't get it from me, which is different. But sources can be tricky.
Last question. And this has really been a treat for me. Way more for you, because I'm sure you've rated this and given it a low grade. This is what you do. And as soon as you said that, I was like, God dang. And now I'm going to actually feel like I'm being critiqued during the interview. I didn't feel like that going in. But final question is, you know, I'm about to go through a big contract negotiation here with right? So, okay. You know, and it's quite the monster. I'm not going to lie to you. What am I not knowing to ask for?
What is it you don't have?
I don't know. I'm doing pretty good, Dan.
Yes. I always look at it this way. I loved for 15 years being at ESPN, and I could have gotten jobs outside of it, but I loved what I was doing. But you can't tell them that you love it so much that you don't factor in what you're worth outside of what you're doing, if that makes sense. That, hey, on the open market, what would I be worth? Take care of me here. And I always took less But I didn't have any, I didn't want to do anything else. So do what you love. And it's really hard to find that, because if you let money be the carrot that's in front of you, you'll always chase it and you'll never be satisfied. But if you have people you like, you got, you know, they make sure that the people who are surrounding you are good people, fun people. I love seeing my guys every single day. We just laugh. I mean, you're serious when you need to be, but we have fun. I enjoy them. And it's 20 years for some of these guys. But I think that's the moment, you know, that you got to kind of go. And if you say to your wife, what do you think? Because sometimes it, my wife is the smartest person. And, you know, you get somebody on the outside kind of looking at all this, because we get too close to the sun and you don't want to be Icarus here and, you know, go down in flames. So do what you love as long as you can do it. Or you can just take a load of money and then run with it.
Bob. Yeah, I was hoping for that, like airplane or money. Hey, listen, Dan, I'm just massive fan, just massive. And thank you for your time. And, you know, that's all. And I know you got a busy day ahead. So thank you very much. And one day, hopefully, I hope I can touch you soon.
And I hope we cross paths. Congratulations on all your success.
Thank you.
I think that it's not by accident, you know, but I think that that's important as you move forward. Don't forget the kid from a small town in Arkansas, because staying humble, because this business will bite you in the ass quickly.
Thank you, Dan. Have a good day.
Thank you, Bobby.
The Bobby Cast. We'll be right back.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots. And Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
Tecovas.com.
Tecovas. Yeah. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on StraightTalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me, because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, to take care of others. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight, and just text the word Bobby to 785-833. It's only 6 numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833.
This is the Bobby Cast.
That's Dan Patrick. That was super cool. Let's talk about another one that was just insane. Jerry Jones. I sat down with Cowboys legendary owner Jerry Jones. We went to Dallas and we hung out with the whole Jones family. It was kind of insane. Mr. Jones hosted me, my wife, Eddie, Mike D. We went in a suite and watched the game. An Arkansas native, and that's really what got me in, because I just emailed randomly to the website. And so we talked, and Jerry hung out with us forever. We talked about his upbringing, whether or not a legendary story about him was true, so much more. Here he is, Jerry Jones. Mr. Jones, I've heard people call you many things since we've been here the last hour. I've heard Mr. Jones, they refer to you as Jerry. Someone called you Uncle Jerry a minute ago. What? You have a lot of names here as you walk around.
Well, I do prefer, especially from you, Jerry.
Is that really what I feel like? I can call you Jerry because that means we're friends now.
Of course, we are friends. But mainly you've got that Arkansas blood in you, which qualifies us both to have a little fun.
Probably cousins.
And why not? Can be. I've got a lot of Joneses running around out here. One just getting lying. Yeah.
This a story that I've rarely shared, and there's 0% chance that you would remember this, and I don't expect you to, but it's probably 15 or so years ago. You were in Hot Springs. You were sitting in a section of a restaurant, and I think it was Oakline. I was at the races. You were sitting in a section between the restaurant and the bar waiting on somebody, and I saw you sitting there, and I thought, Jerry Jones from Arkansas? I'm from Arkansas. Why can't I not go up and say hello? And so I approached you, and I said hello, and I sat beside you. I was waiting on people, too. And you and I talked for like 10 to 15 minutes, and I kind of just told you my story. You talked to me for a while, and I remember thinking, I can't believe Jerry Jones is a normal, like, nice person, because we always see big Jerry Jones, you know, the guy that's running the Cowboys, but you were such a normal person. And at the end of the conversation, you literally gave me your cell phone number and said, if you ever need anything, call me. I never called you. I actually needed a few things, but I never called you. But I left that going, like, Jerry Jones is like a for real caring guy, like a guy who seemingly cares about relationships a lot. Is that would you say that is the key to your success here has been relationships?
Well, let me say this. My life is spent with my one-on-one relationships. What is a little confusing about this thing is that the more visibility you have, and frankly, being associated with the Cowboys, I don't ever confuse the interest in Jerry Jones with what the real deal is, and that's the interest in the Dallas Cowboys. I'll say this seriously. I did have a marvelous young life growing up in Arkansas, and I was coached up real good in life, not necessarily football, but life. Great parents, entrepreneurs, always struggling, but wonderful around the kitchen table, osmosis, but certainly got a great appreciation for the kinds of lives that make up Arkansas, for sure. There's no question that my affinity is there. I continue to have things there. I continue to have all the relationships I've had. But having said that, when I got involved with the Cowboys, I knew it was going to be tough because the Cowboys were losing $1 million a month in cash flow, and I bought part of them from the government that had been foreclosed on. And football was not going strong then, not pro football at the time. As a matter of fact, I don't and never have heard of anybody that ever made a positive dollar in sports owning a team, period, football or otherwise. Where I'm going with this, but I was proud. I was really proud to my master's thesis at Arkansas when I got to play on our national championship team. But I was also going to school. My master's thesis was the role of marketing in modern day football. I dreamed of somehow being a part of a life that was had something to do with football. But this is my point. To everyone, go to your passion. Because I just thought that I had accomplished a little something that I could be proud of when I bought the Cowboys. What I didn't realize was that every day, inspired by getting to be a part of the future, getting to be a part of the fans, getting to be a part of the game, it just caused me to try things I would have never done and caused things to happen that would have never happened. And so the facts are, I really was just getting started. The Cowboys inspired me way beyond just the touchdowns or any financial gain.
I wrote a book called Fail Until You Don't, and I had Governor Hutchison in Arkansas and Chris Stapleton, a lot of guys that we know as super successful artists or in business, talk about their biggest failure, but how that actually led them to their biggest successes. And we see you as just an eternal success story because we see you on TV or we hear you Was there a certain failure early on that actually taught you so much that allowed all of this success later on?
Well, when we were first married, my wife Jean and I, they came to the house when she stepped out one day and took her purse and grabbed all the credit cards out and cut them in two. About 15 years before I bought the Cowboys, I came to Dallas. And after I bought the Cowboys, a writer asked when we didn't win but one game our first year, which was a little downer. But when we didn't, he said, these have got to be some of the roughest days of your life. And I said, no, not even here in Dallas. About 15 years ago, I landed at Love Field, took my card up to rent a car from I think Hertz, and they looked down a list and cut my card in two and said, young
they
man,
cut it in front of you?
You need to learn how to pay your bills. Now, that's a hard day in Dallas, not necessarily a one-loss record with the Cowboys.
So much Salvation Army, I feel like people know about it now because of what you guys do as far as starting that campaign. Why is that so important to you guys to have the Kettle and Salvation Army as not only part of the Cowboys, but just to be a part of that brand all over the country?
Again, Bobby, the thing that surprised, I'm never surprised at the interest in the team, but what does surprise me is when I travel, and I travel a lot, I'll have as many people come up and say thanks for what you do for the Salvation Army and the Red Kettle as say go Cowboys. It probably is the most meaningful or notable thing for me about having been associated with pro sports or the Dallas Cowboys. We have 3 million volunteers in this country on Red Kettle time in the Christmas time. While people are having meetings or board meetings about how to help people, they've got Santa Claus under a tree, they've got shoes on somebody, or they got food in their stomach before they can even have a board meeting in other organizations. And they get it there with most of the dollar that you put in that kettle going right where you'd love to see it go. That's why I'm such a fan. If we could play football as good as the people at Salvation Army do their job, we'd be world champs every year.
Do you get nervous before games?
Very. Very.
Still?
And I'm nervous right now. Very nervous. I always have, but really almost sick nervous.
This many games into owning such a big franchise and you're nervous, why do you think the nerves are in you still today?
Well, you look at what might be the possibility of coming out playing good if we can get through this thing without serious injuries. All of the things, I think, like anything really, but you need to be positive to play football. I played football for the Razorbacks, and I had to call on it, boy. It hurt me to play football. I love baseball. One time my trainer said, Jones, he's had a Virginia brogue, and he said, Jones, you've got to have the lowest tolerance for pain of any kid we've ever had with the Razorbacks. And I said, damn it, Granny, it hurts me more than it does everybody else. I said, hell, their toes are hanging off. And I said, it hurts me to get kicked. I deserve an honor. Figure up an honor for me. I'm brave to be out there. It hurts more than they do.
You played running back in high school and then offensive line for the 64 championship team, right? Am I accurate there?
Correct. You've done your homework, boy.
I live it. I'm diehard. You know, I'm diehard Razorback, diehard Jerry Jones. So what's that transition? And did you not want to play running back in college, or did they say you should now play offensive line?
One of the toughest thing I ever had to stomach was my junior year. I was the starting fullback for the Razorbacks. I was so proud. I replayed almost everything that was going to happen for the year. We came to school, and I started the first 3 or 4 games. I pulled a ham, and we had some other fullbacks, good ones, Bobby Nix, Charles Daniels, people that we all could remember back. But we lost all of our guards. And I had played guard my first year at the Razorbacks, so they moved me to guard. I went over to talk to Coach Brawls to tell him my heart wasn't in it. I couldn't move to guard. I wanted to carry the ball. I wanted to catch passes. And so he said, fine, Jerry. Well, another coach came back to my locker, and he went around the room, and he named guys that had never been on the field. Fred Marshall, who became the great quarterback that led us to our national championship team. Kenny Dean, a great running back, never been on the field. There were all kinds, handfuls that had never been on the field. And my coach looked at me and said, Jerry, I told you, mother and daddy, when I offered you the scholarship, I'd take care of you. He says, Coach Brawls will sit you down, and you may never see a field again. You can make this move that he's asking you to do, and you can have a hell of a career and be a starter. Don't you see the handwriting on the wall? Well, I did. I did like he did. I was mad about having done it then. I'm mad about it at 80 years old today. I'm still mad about it. I should have been carrying ball and catching passes.
What if a player says that to you? What if they're like, I don't want to move. I don't want to return punts. You know, I'm the what kind of conversation would you have with them?
Well, first of all, because really, as much as anything, that story. I would have grace. I've had it said to me in different ways, not necessarily the same situation about a position, but I've had it to me with other men and women. And when I see somebody buck, when I see them stop and come in, and it's hard, I know it's hard, and tell me, look, I respect you. I'm not trying to be awkward, but I want to go this way. I respect that, and I remember that story, and I go there. I'm a cat that's had 8 lives out of 9. And so I'm a life giver, I hope, and do show grace when somebody has some real mindset as to where they want to go with their life.
We've got 3 questions left. Now, this is an urban legend that I've heard about you, that when you were, and you can tell me if this is false, but I want to get the whole story out. And you've had such an instrumental part of designing this facility, which is still A+. And I, you know, we were talking earlier, after 14 years, people still treat it like it's brand new, and they go, have you seen it yet? But the story is that there was a tile that you wanted, and you flew to another country to say, I'd like to have this tile. They said, we don't have it, it's on back order. So you said you bought the whole place, then you got the tile, then you sold the place and made money off the selling of the business. Is that story true?
Well, let me say this. I don't know that I made money when I sold it back.
So that's
but
true?
But I was creative in getting the tile. Now, you had a little problem. When you want a foot of tile in a place like this, you're talking about 4 million square feet, 5 million square feet. So if tile is $3.20, then multiply that times 3 or 4 million. Well, in this particular case, I was trying to get my wife, Jean, to find the perfect tile for the right price, which was a lot less, but she found it. And one of the other things she did is she took granite, and they chopped the granite up, and then they aggregated it back as a solid. And it's the most beautiful thing you've ever seen, and we have it on our bar tops all around.
You bought the company?
This place, yes. This place did have the benefit of us all getting in and looking at every countertop and looking at every corner that was out there, and it was a labor of love. While we're talking about it, and I know we're talking too much about Arkansas, but Coach Brawls was such an inspiration for me here, and he really gave me a lot of keep going and a lot of confidence, if you will, on it. He took us to the Astrodome when I was 19. We were down there to get ready to play Nebraska in the Cotton Bowl here in Dallas, and he took us away from the fans. He took us out there. There'd never been a game played in the Astrodome, but it was ready to go. Golly, it looked like Mars. How could you think about playing a game? And all I know is that from that point forward, I read everything I could, talked to everybody I could about it. Roll the clock forward 30 years later, I was thinking about this place, AT&T. Now, show you how kicking in for young people happens. I didn't know where I was going to get all the money, but I knew one thing. A man could do it, because I had been in one that a man did, the Astrodome. Well, guess what happens when you're young? When you get a chance to do it, you go. You can put 5 of those damn Astrodomes in here today. So you always, if you get inspired early, you can make it go.
Question 2 of 3, talk about music for a second. In your free time, who do you listen to? And then the ACMs are coming here. Like, you're super instrumental in that. Why do you feel like country music is so on brand with what you're doing? And then also, who do you listen to?
Well, first of all, it comes natural. When my father had his grocery store, my sister and I lived above it. But in the middle of the store, he built a bandstand. And he brought in a great marketer announcer in Little Rock called Brother Hal. And he brought Brother Hal in from Forest City, Arkansas. And Brother Hal did live amateur talent contest, and he basically made and produced shows right out of the middle of the store. It was a big stand right in the middle of the store. And so I just grew up. I was around it all the time. I was around the store constantly. Right across the street, there was a great, if you will, honky-tonk, and some of the greatest names of country, Hank Williams, those kind of guys. And I got to see it, because of my age, evolve up through Elvis, a couple of years older than me. But my point is, I have lived a great mainstream of country, and if you will, a little of the rock and roll that we all look back on today. Well, I live that, and my dad would just frankly, in his own way, indoctrinate. He had a band called the Pat Supermarketeers. His name was Pat.
That's what the supermarket was called, Pat's, right?
Exactly, yeah. Pat's. And he would take that band, and he'd be out late and having a good time with the country music rolling. And, boy, he'd bring that band in, and here it would go. And he'd only let his friends stay in, but everybody was his friend. So they'd have a big time and keep it open.
Who'd you listen to this morning? Just give me a couple artists you like still.
Oh, I like Stapleton, of course. And not of course, but I like Stapleton. And I stop in my tracks when any of those great ones come in. But I'm a great Roy Orbison fan. He'll stop me in my tracks when I see some of his great music. And I can't move when Dream comes on. Dreams.
I'll sing you a little bit. Dream, 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 dream. That's pretty good, huh?
Roy, you're right on
cue. Yeah. All right, final question for you, Mr. Jones. Sorry, Jerry, final question. I know that so much of what you do is giving back to not only this community, but also you can drive on the campus of Fayetteville, the football complex. You guys have done so much there. But now there's a museum being built right outside of the stadium. Can you tell me about that?
Well, we're extraordinarily privileged to get to use this forum, if you will, the Cowboys, the visibility, and the National Medal of Honor winners, not winners, but recipients, decided to let us help fund and build the National Medal of Honor Museum. And in conjunction with that, the same monument is, not the same one, but a monument is being built in Washington to recognize the great stories of, as patriots, of what men and women have done for this country. And I think it's so big right now. Where the Cowboys want to do something special is it's like this stadium. This stadium was not built for the 100,000 that come to the game. It's a great place. But it was built for $35 million. It was built for $30 million. That's who Al Michaels is talking to. That's who John Madden was talking to. Well, we want to take the stories of the Medal of Honor recipients, and we want those to not only be recognized through a tangible thing close by, but somehow we want those stories to get involved, somehow mixed in. Wonder how we're going to do that. We've got a plan. And mixed in, and so that when 30 million people are watching these games, they can hear about what these Medal of Honors did for them to get to sit there with the freedom to watch the game.
Jerry, I appreciate the time. Thank you very much. Massive fan, and can't wait to come back for the ACMs, which they're thinking about letting me host. I think a call from Jerry Jones saying Bobby Bones is my guy would really kick that door in.
Just saying. Bobby, I'm a great fan of yours. I really am. And let's don't make this the last time that we have a visit.
I'll see you next week.
Because you've got a passion between just generally what you think is important, and music is a big part of it. Music is a big part of the Cowboys. We play it hard every day during practice, just to have the kind of replicating the noise that they'll be seeing. And I was down here in the dressing room. I wish I'd have taken you down, but you couldn't have heard yourself talk in that dressing room. And the biggest fights that come on in a dressing room is whether we're going to play country, we're going to play some soul, and then every now and one will step up and say, guys, I'm tired of this arguing. We're going to have a little church music in here before we go to the field.
And maybe a little Roy Orbison. Dream! Jerry Jones, everybody. Jerry, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bobby.
Let's take a quick pause for a message from our sponsor.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct-to-consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
Tecovas.com.
Tecovas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for four lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with four lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
Hey, it's Amy Brown here to talk about the incredible work that's being done by St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and to ask you today to join me in becoming a partner in HOPE. When you make a donation to St. Jude, you're helping an organization that has helped push the overall childhood cancer survivor rate from 20% to more than 80%. And I can tell you from personal experience, that number and the hope that it brings is invaluable. Families do not have to worry about a thing. Treatment is covered, travel, housing, food. And when you're a family that's going through this, like imagine you're a parent, your kid gets cancer. You need to focus on that child. You don't need to be worrying about other things, and financial stuff can get really stressful. St. Jude covers it. Your support means families never receive a bill from St. Jude for treatment. And when you sign up for just $19 a month, you're going to get the new This Shirt Saves Lives tee. So join me in helping St. Jude in the fight against childhood cancer. Become a partner in HOPE and text Bobby to 785-833. That's B-O-B-B-Y to 785-833.
Welcome back to the Bobbycast.
That was Jerry Jones. Again, absurd that we got to do that. We flew in his helicopter with him. It was just me, my wife, Eddie, Mike D, Jerry, and his son in the helicopter. I was the pilot. That's how crazy it was. No, I wasn't, but still. Now, let's move on to one of the coolest guys in sports entertainment now, which is Rich Eisen. I listen to his podcast almost every single day. I filled in for Rich Eisen, which, other than this interview, I've never met Rich in person, but I did go and fill in for his show for a couple days, which was a highlight for me career-wise. Rich worked for ESPN for years, same kind of Dan Patrick vibe, where he's one of the guys that really made ESPN a pop culture phenomenon. And, you know, he does his radio show, he's NFL Network, NFL Combine. Rich also runs the 40-yard dash every year to raise money for St. Jude, and anybody that is consistent and raises money for St. Jude, obviously, I love. Rich Eisen, we talked about his first big call in his career, and then all kinds of good career talk. Here he is, Rich Eisen. Massive fan, and have been for a whole long time, and I watch you. I listen to your podcast, each hour is loaded separately, so I try to... I'm a big fan. If you can't tell, I know all the nuances of the Rich Eisen show. But I have the Roku app that I can watch you guys on. You've had to transition a bit with all the new technologies. You have an 11-year-old son too. Does he help you stay on to what's cool?
I've got
what's
a 14, an 11, and a 9, and they are. It's amazing because back when I was a kid, it would be what's on channels 2, 4, and 7, right? Now they know what's on an app, and they get pissed at me when I go to try and search for anything on the old Roku device. They're like, "Dad, that's on Paramount Plus. Dad, that's on it's on Disney." Like, and they say it with such scorn. I don't understand it, but that's I take it, I absorb it, and I try to get better every day. That's why I have this sign on my desk every day. I don't know if anybody's ever going to try to take this away from me. The best dad ever. But, that's I'm in my hopefully 14th consecutive year of that title run that I'm on.
I want to talk about getting the call, like the big call. And, you know, just knowing your history, you know, just being, you know, a sports anchor and reporter back at a local station, but moving up to ESPN, when you got the call that we want you at ESPN, where were you and what was actually said on the call?
So I was in Redding, California, at the ABC local affiliate, KRCR Television. And I sent a tape to a headhunter, three of them across the United States. I was 25 years old. This was 1995. And I'm like, you know, I was there for a year. I'm like, what does it matter? It's just first class postage. I'll send these tapes out. So they send the tapes out to a headhunter, and I get a phone call at home from the headhunter, who says to me, I've got a very interesting bite. A big time shop is interested in more of your work. Send the best written material. Another tape. Send another tape. And then I go to work one day, and it's a phone where it would ring once, one loud ring if it was a local call, and a ring if it was outside of the area code. I mean, again, this is 1995. And whenever it would ring, it would be my parents or my brother, because I'm from New York City and they lived in New Jersey and my brother was in Southern California. So it never would ring twice, and it ring. And I pick up the phone, and it was an agent named Henry Reisch from the William Morris Talent Agency, saying he wanted my reel immediately because I was the hottest up and coming sportscaster in America, according to him and what he had been hearing. And I'm like, all right, because I'm about to go drive 50 miles into the Shasta mountain range to try and cover a local high school volleyball game with my 3/4-inch camera connected with a coaxial cable to the deck with a huge, you know, strap over my other shoulder, one man banding the whole thing. And so I'm not feeling very hot. He goes, send me the tape. Great. Hang up the phone. Call my brother up. And I'm like, you'll never guess what just happened. And I tell him, he goes, get out of here. No kidding. I'm like, yeah, this just happened. Hang the phone up, ring. And another one. And this is in 5 minutes of each other. And I'm like, watch, I am such hot. That's ESPN on the phone. And sure enough, it was a guy named Al Jaffe from ESPN, their headhunter, who I had sent multiple unsolicited tapes and resumes to over the previous 5 year period. And it was him telling me that he had gotten my tape. They really like it. And they want to set up an interview and an audition. And I thought it was my brother telling all of my friends back home, call Rich, say you're Al Jaffe, because he was sending all that. And I thought it was all my friends trying to mother me, you know, and it was not. It was the real deal guy. And I almost cursed him out, thinking it was a friend, like, who are you? But it was really him. And I flew down to Los Angeles a few weeks later to interview. I did, with a whole bunch of executives that were there for the Cable Ace Awards, which no longer exist. And then a few weeks later, I auditioned for the gig on a Monday after, by the way, a snowstorm prevented me from getting halfway across the country in the initial time of auditioning. So it was a long wait, a lot of ups and downs, but I got the gig after auditioning with Al Jaffe. And that's my story.
Did you ever have imposter syndrome, or at any time did you have imposter syndrome while you were there, especially the early days?
What do you mean?
Like, you're like, okay, I'm probably not at the level that they think I am. I'm about to do this, and I'm not really that good.
My first sports center was with Larry Beal was the sports center anchor. He's now out in Northern California. And this is before ESPN News. So I was the last guy that they hired that they threw directly on sports center. And so ESPN News is what they would put guys and gals on to get their teeth cut and get up to speed. So I just remember it was a half hour sports center on the round of 32 day, I believe, or it was a Sweet 16. It was the middle of March. So it's probably a round of 32 day. And I had 11 highlights. I'd only seen one of them. So they were going to hand me 10 paperwork shot sheets with it, where you could follow along what's written there to know what the highlights were. And I would have to ad lib the whole damn thing. And I remember walking downstairs and saying to myself, I have two choices. I can either pee down my leg, or I could just suck it up and say I'm ready for this. And I think I did both. And it was wild. And I just looked around, and the people that were in the newsroom were all the anchors who I had emulated or wanted to emulate or had watched for years and what made me want to be a SportsCenter anchor. And they were automatically my colleagues. And it was overwhelming, no question about it. Keith Olbermann, Dan Patrick, and Kilbourne, and, you know, Robin Roberts, and Dave, you know, Charlie Steiner, Bob Lee. I mean, my God, these were all the people that I was now colleagues with. It was overwhelming, but, you know, I was age 26. But it was the time of my life, 7 years, met my wife there. My children are ESPN babies because of that, technically, and unbelievable. What a run.
I watch a lot of your work with the draft, and I wonder, with people being a big fan of you, people admiring what you do, do you sometimes get a lot of inside information that you can't share? Like, there's a fine line of things you know and things you can actually say?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but I mean, I don't think I'm I do this thing to break news, you know, I say that having a journalism degree from Northwestern. I know that's not something you want to say. I think I'm here to just kind of guide everyone through what I'm hearing and understand what I can say, what I don't say. You know, I'm not Schefter. I'm not Ian Rappaport, my colleague at the NFL Network. That's not what I'm doing. If I hear something that can break something, I will do that. But, you know, a great, for instance, is that prior to the 2018 draft, all I heard, this is the draft in Dallas, that it went Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, and then Lamar Jackson was the last quarterback. That was the quarterback draft of 2018. We had heard quite a bit on this show from people who we spoke to off camera, and what I heard at the combine leading up, we heard a lot that Russell Wilson was in play. We're like, you get out of here. Like, what the hell? Really? And, you know, we didn't say anything, which is good because Russell didn't get traded. But now we found out literally in the week before his home opener in Seattle as a member of the Broncos, he let it be known that they did try to trade him prior to 2018. So what we heard was actually accurate. But had we said it, we would have created this huge stir. I shouldn't say that what I say creates a huge stir. I shouldn't say that. I would just say that we would have definitely put something out there that might have gained attention potentially significantly that would have been inaccurate, even though it was accurate. And I don't like to traffic in those waters. I would just prefer to kind of make you smarter by talking about the things that I think are going to happen, not what I'm hearing could happen. Like, that is not what I like to traffic in.
You've been running the 40 for a bunch of years now. Are you ever going to hit a time where you're like, all right, I got to stop doing it? If you hit like a seven seconds, are you going to go like, I need to pass this down and let my son do it now?
No, Bobby, if I need a walker, that's when I'll stop.
Okay.
You know, if I had actual help, you know, doing that. But to be very straightforward with you again, yeah, there is. Like, at some point, I don't think people want to watch some guy run, you know, with a limp and do something particularly bad. My wife wants me to train for it. I don't know. I mean, I go back and forth. Like, should I really, really train for it? Like, it was sort of like an everyman approach where just like, it's just anybody coming off the couch and running it. But now maybe, as again, I'm 53, perhaps me training for it could be an example to people who are advancing to stay in shape. And maybe that's another aspect of it that I need to focus on, because the reason why I do it now and don't want to give it up is because of the fundraising aspect for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. But it has been, you know, amazing. It's as you could see here, the logo of my show and what so many people do associate me with. And it was born, like many things in television, out of complete boredom waiting to shoot a television show as I was sitting next to Terrell Davis under the buzz of the old RCA Dome, which got blown to smithereens for the new stadium in Indianapolis, where he said, I said, how fast do you think I can run the 40? He laughed at me. I cursed at him and went down and ran it. Had no idea that the NFL Network crew on a break was actually recording it. They played it back as a surprise to me on live TV, and it kind of got a life of its own that still lives today.
Well, Rich, I appreciate the time. I'm a big fan. Like, again, and if you guys have Roku or Roku channel, which I have the Roku app, and I'm able to catch Rich on, I listen to him on podcast as well. One of the interviews that I really enjoyed was when you talked to the guys that do the town halls, the Chad Kroger, the, you know, when you went and you were like, hey, because they go into these town hall meetings and like propose water towers named after Britney Spears. Like, I thought that was such a funny interview. And I'll end with this because you are interviewing celebrities and athletes. Have you had to change your style or research a bit more because your interviews are a bit different now?
Well, you know, I've got a great production team that's stuck with me and this show through the pandemic and through many different partners. Hopefully the Roku channel is the last switch that I make. And I appreciate that you got a Roku device just to keep watching. That's pretty cool. But we dig in to see if there is a celebrity sports cross-section, because that's the idea of this show, is, you know, that sports is a touchstone of pop culture just as much as movies and television. The greatest sporting event that the American sports scene puts on and exports, the Super Bowl, is stopped in the middle for a rock concert and nobody bats an eyelash anymore. So it really is something that I love to put together, and I'm thrilled that the folks at Roku and the Roku channel are into it too. So whenever a celebrity comes on, we see, you know, did they play sports, or if they're a diehard fan of the team, happy to dive in and let them be a pundit and give opinions. Because I think when a celebrity who's into that comes in to promote his or her movie or television show or music or album, they prefer to talk about that rather than the funny story from their vacation. And then there are some celebrities who don't know sports very well and are deathly afraid that if they come on, it'll be like if you saw the movie Diner, where you know, one of the characters won't get married to his fiance unless she passes a quiz on the Baltimore Colts successfully. They feel like that's what I'm going to do with them or to them, which is the worst thing for a host to do. So I try to make it comfortable and just talk about their movie or TV history. And so we've got, as I said, a terrific crew that we put together here, and we all, you know, I think really like each other, that we come up with a segment called Celebrity True or False, where we just go through their history about, well, this story was on the internet, this story was on your IMDb page. Is it true or false about your TV show or about your movies? And it's just a great way, and fans eat it up, thank goodness. I mean, we had Henry Winkler on the other month, and we talked to him about Jump the Shark. We had, you know, Gerald McCraney here the other day from so many terrific shows. We asked him about Major Dad, and that's what I love to do, just having people from across a pop culture landscape talk about their movies and TV. So yes, my long-winded answer is yes, there is a lot more research that goes into it, but you put up a production construct to place it in. And not only is it something enjoyable to watch and listen to live, it's very consumable on an on-demand podcast or YouTube. Our YouTube page, youtube.com/RichEisenShow, has 28,000 videos from our near 8-year history on it. And so, yeah, I do love having celebrities on, and it does require a little bit more help. Certainly, if you mentioned Chad and TJ, they come on and drop the word perineum for the first time in my my show's history.
Well, listen, big fan. You guys follow at Rich Eisen, at Rich Eisen Show, Roku. As you say now, you'll be announcing a Sirius channel really soon, radio. Yep. Like, I'm a total fanboy. I'll admit it now that it's over, and I've admitted it six times during, but just keep doing it. And okay. I'll be listening every day, and hopefully I'll meet you in real life sometime soon, Rich. Thanks
Absolutely.
A lot, man.
When you're back here in Los Angeles after waking up at 1 a.m. and you're done with your show, just come in here and sit next to me. We'll have a chat.
All right, buddy. Thank you. See you later. Hey, really hope you enjoyed this episode. You know, it's kind of a crossover episode with the sports show 25 Whistles. But if you listen to this, I'm sure you listen to a lot of people that maybe you weren't a fan of until you actually heard the interview. So, and these weren't super sports related, and I thought you guys may enjoy them all together. If you did enjoy these conversations, there are plenty more like this. Just go over to 25 Whistles and subscribe. Or don't. I still wanted you to hear them anyway. Thanks again for listening, and thanks to all the guests that joined me.
Thanks for listening to a Bobbycast production.
This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.